Thanks for joining us this Sunday on Nevada Backcountry. Hey, maybe you've been out scouting and you realize you are not in shape and you're looking for a lighter rifle to carry this season. Go check out Legacy Sports International, the Howa Super Light, 4.7 pounds. It's amazing, easy to carry, super accurate. Go check them out, LegacySportsInternational.com. Now, diving into the show, I don't have a lot of housekeeping stuff. I will say there was just this past weekend, there was a guy bit by a rattlesnake and was hospitalized. So we'll get into snakes in a little bit here. But first, let's do a little scouting update. And I'm going to yield my time first to you, Dave, because I want to hear about sheep.
Yeah, so I've got a good friend who was one of the few fortunate folks who drew a California sheep. And we've been out doing a little bit of scouting.
With 5 points. Don't fail to mention that, right?
Well, no, I didn't want to mention that.
I will mention it.
It's like, fine, you had 5, 7 points. It wasn't very much. But
yeah.
I didn't want to mention that because I don't want him getting stoned.
I'm not green with jealous rage.
Caned, dragged behind a slow tractor, you know, that kind of stuff. So, yeah, so we went out, did some scouting. And first off, we set our camp up and everything, and we had Onyx, and we said, okay, here's some of our access points, get near the wilderness area. And it was amazing how many roads are so washed out from that heavy snow we had and then that nice warm up. It would have been so cool to be out there when that water was flowing down those mountains and using the roads as, you know, it's basically riverbed.
Right.
Some of these areas, it was like 2-3 foot cuts out of the road.
Jeez.
With boulders in them. Rocks the size of tires in the crevices. I was like, well, we're not riding up that one.
Yeah.
So we had to do some other stuff to get into the area. But we saw some sheep, nothing real big yet, but we're going to be heading back out and relocating ourselves to another spot.
What's real big in your world?
I don't think we saw one that was... probably under 150 is what we were kind of is what we saw.
Okay.
You know, under the 150 range. So, yeah.
Because with California's, 150 and up is kind of where I go, okay, that's a pretty good ram. I said that to somebody on my dad's sheep hunt, and he kind of looked at me like I was stupid. And the unit we were in has had a history of producing bigger class rams.
Yeah.
But man, a 150 inch ram, that's a pretty good size ram.
I would think so.
Yeah.
You know? And I know my friend if he sees something in that range, he's making
a play.
Yeah. He's going to be throwing some bullets at it.
Okay.
Hopefully one.
Yeah. Hopefully ideally one, just one.
But yeah. I know this particular area 2 years ago, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, the hunter got the belt buckle, had the biggest ram.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. You know, that doesn't mean much. Doesn't mean like there's still some pigs out there, but.
Genetics are in the area, though.
Yeah, the genetics for, you know, the big 170 pluses are there.
Ooh.
So we'll see. But anyway, it turned out really well, insanely hot, you know, typical Nevada where you go from super cold, lots of snow, and we kind of bypass spring and go straight into hot.
Yeah, and this, I mean, holy smokes, man, triple digits. I said after this last winter, I wasn't going to complain about heat this summer, but I got to be honest, there is a certain point where it's like, oh man, this is too dang hot. Anything over 100 degrees, humping around with a pack is pretty brutal.
Yeah, it is. But you know, we're nothing like Arizona right now. Phoenix area, my God, they were saying 19 straight days of over 110.
Yeah.
They're averaging 114 and their high so far is 121.
That's a whole new level.
I'd be like buying a ticket and I'd be out. I'd
be
jumping a plane. But anyway.
So what about challenges so far, scouting-wise? Access?
Yeah, access has been a challenge. Some of the access points, like I stated, were really washed out. So we had to do, you know, a fair amount of hiking, which is fine with me. I don't care.
Yeah.
I like the hiking part. We had to do a lot more hiking. So that kind of limited how much area we were able to cover.
Right.
You know, for scouting, getting up to nice spots so we could glass and sit down and kind of check the areas out. And with this heat, they're bedding pretty quick. You know,
so dawn and dusk only.
Yeah, it was kind of that way. We saw some during the middle of the day that kind of got up, I'm assuming, to stretch some legs and kind of walk around a little bit and such. But access, pretty tough in a couple spots, but, you know, like I said, we're going to head back out next week, and we are going to really tackle it pretty hard and get into, we found some access into another area that we really wanted to get into, that we'd gotten some intel that there were a fair amount of sheep in there recently.
And I want to bring up real quick, find yourself a friend like David Catalano. You turned in your antelope tag to help a buddy focus on this sheep hunt.
I did. He's a very dear friend. And, you know, he really helped me out last year on my desert sheep. He was there every minute of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just, you know, I'm just paying it forward. He's a good man.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what? I'm going to turn the tag in. I can always get another antelope tag. Sheep tags aren't that way.
No.
I will get another antelope tag and hunt him in a year or two or something. And I'm dedicating this time to help him find his sheep.
Now, you're still going to do the deer hunt? You drew a deer tag, right?
Yeah, he and I both.
Okay.
Yeah, so we, you know, we both want to keep the deer tag. We know the area really, really well. So we're just going to grab our bows, get out there. And as you know, like you and I were talking earlier about, you know, we always go out there thinking, okay, we're going to
find a stud,
hunt the big one. We're 170 or better, or nothing. And, you know, opening day or 2 days in, you're like, dude, that's a pretty sweet forking horn right there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All 80 inches of him would look great in a crock pot.
Exactly. So, you know, we're hoping that might happen. So,
okay.
But, yeah. So we'll go spend 4 days, 4 or 5 days on the deer hunt.
But the focus is sheep.
The focus this year is definitely California sheep.
Yeah, man. And that seems to be the species right now that everybody, I mean, all sheep are cool, but the Californias, everybody goes kind of gaga over.
Well, it's such a hard tag to get. I mean, I've been told that I'm almost maxed out on points, and I've been told, well, you'll probably get another desert sheep before you get a California. And I'm like, dude, that's not encouraging.
Now, when you say maxed out on points, what do you mean by that?
Like, I've got 26, 25 points or something like that, and I think max out at 28 or 30 or something like that.
Okay, so that's why people talk about being in the sweet spot for drawing at a certain point level. So after whatever it is, 28, 29, 30 points, however many, you can't get any more points?
I'm going to have to look into that one.
Okay.
Because
I know guys talk about that like 18 to 22 point range, like most guys tend to draw.
Yeah, that's what I've heard is the sweet spot, and some of the literature that I've read and checked out it seems like the sweet spot's that like 16 to 21 point range.
Okay.
That could be a product of that's where the bulk of the point people are.
Oh, you know right, what I right, mean? Yeah.
You know, when you talk a population and you find out that 63% of them or what have you all are in that 16 to 21 point range, well, obviously that's going to be the sweet spot.
Yeah, okay.
You know, and some of us that have been around a lot longer who are sitting in the high 20s, you know, most people are like, you suck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, we'll see. But yeah, Californians seem to be the ticket, man. You pull one of those and it's like Willy Wonka's golden ticket kind of
thing. Yeah. Well, that's you and I were talking too about, you know, I've got this deer hunt and part of my mindset is, man, I'd like to be looking at sheep right now. That being said, I'm still extremely grateful and extremely happy to be out there looking for deer, but there's something cool about sheep, man.
Oh, it's when you see them up on the mountain, it just gives you that like, you know, wow.
On that note, cue the music. Let's go to break real quick. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about snakes. And we will talk about heat, big game species, how it affects them, all on Nevada Backcountry. Snakes, love them or hate them, We live in Nevada. There's a ton of them.
Yeah.
You're like an amateur. What did you call it? Herping?
I really enjoy herping. So even on like our scouting trip for the sheep, I'm a really geek when it comes to, I call it herping.
Okay.
So I go out and check out reptiles and search for them. So when we were out on the sheep hunt, he wanted to go and check something out. And so I'm like, cool. I'm just going to walk this area because I want to check out and look for herps.
Okay.
So I caught some horned lizards and collared leopard lizards, which are mean as heck. And just, it was so cool. But you've got to be super careful with these temps and with the rock formations when you're in sheep country. Big undercuts, like these, you got these big washouts right now from the water.
Yeah.
Snakes and critters, mainly snakes, love to come out. They'll sunbathe for a while, and then they're going to go in, and they're going to get into some of those nice cutouts where it's a little cooler, and they're just going to like chill out right there. And, you know, you jump off something, and you land right in front of them. They're going to let you know.
Bit.
Yeah, well, they're going to let you know. And the thing is with snakes is they're obviously with rattlesnakes, we were talking about it earlier, that generally they're going to rattle.
Right, let you know where they're at.
Yeah,
you're in their space.
It's not, yeah, they're not gonna strike as soon as they start rattling. A lot of people think as soon as they rattle, man, they're hammering you, and it's not the case. They're just, it's a warning, like, hey, you're in my space here, just letting you know that I'm here and you're getting close.
Yeah,
but if you keep pursuing them, like, ooh, I want to see how close I can get to this guy. That's the idiot coming out of you. That's like Darwin right there. You know?
Yeah, Darwinism.
Darwinism in its finest. Because once they raise their heads, if they're coiled and they raise their heads and start kind of bringing it back a little bit.
Flattening out
and kind of coming back. And they're rattling. And sometimes they'll stop rattling.
Save the energy for the strike or something?
I don't know what the reason is, but I've seen where they've just stopped rattling. And then they'll be getting in that posture position. And that's when you're like, you should, the light should turn on if you have any sense about you, and you should back off because they're just waiting for the proper timing. And then it's going to be hammer time.
Gotcha. Now, I've heard in northern Nevada, we have the Great Basin rattlesnake, right? That's the subspecies or whatever. Uh-huh. I've heard that for whatever reason, if you're going to get bit by a rattlesnake, that's the one to get bit by. The venom isn't as bad as like, or they don't inject as much venom or something compared to like a timber rattlesnake
or a
diamondback
or something like
that.
Yeah. That's not necessarily true. So there are times where a rattlesnake, if it strikes and does, you know, your best bet's just not to get bit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not to get bit. You don't have to worry about any of that. But if it does happen, there's times where the snake is striking you because you're way too close. You're in the zone. It wants you away from it, and it's too much. So they'll do they can do what's called a false strike.
Okay.
They'll bite you.
I've heard it called a dry strike
before. Dry strike.
Yeah,
dry strike. But they're not going to inject you with any venom. They're just biting you and saying, okay, warning number one.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. But there are times when they do shoot off a little venom, or it's all up to the snake when it comes down to it. It's all up to what the snake wants to do. If it wants to really latch onto you pretty hard and pump some cheek venom in there pretty good, I don't care what rattlesnake it is.
It's bad.
It's not going to be a good day.
Okay.
Okay. So you take a real risk if you are out there trying to tickle a rattlesnake and it strikes you. It could be a dry strike, or it could be
full blown, anything
between, all the way up to full blown puking your guts out and
winding up in the hospital.
Yeah.
This last weekend, somebody in Washoe County got bit, and I think they're still currently in the hospital.
Yeah, so that was probably a good full strike. But
yeah.
And there's some really cool programs out there for your animals. I mean, that's a big thing because a lot of us go out with our pets.
Yeah.
They have the strike training.
Right.
And there are several local people that provide that training.
Well, they call like snake avoidance training
for bird dogs and stuff. I know that the Department of Wildlife sometimes posts workshops, weekend workshops and stuff in relation to that. And then there's a lot of folks that do it on the side for a lot of bird hunters and recreationalists and hikers. most dogs are pretty darn curious, especially
right.
the smaller dog you get, the more of the little dog syndrome it yep. may have. And it's great having a dog when you're out in the field because they will key into those critters, especially if there's any noise like a rattling. Your dog kind of like, what's that? If you do have your dog out with you a lot, it's probably a good idea to get that avoidance training. You know, it's nice that he or she's letting you know there's a snake, but it's not going to be cool when you're having to backpack your dog off the mountain because it's unconscious.
I've always been told pack Benadryl.
Yes.
Early chucker season. Oh, and yeah. if your dog does get tagged, go ahead and get some Benadryl in.
Yeah, I've got that. It's always in my backpack. When
okay.
If, you know, the thing is if you're 70 miles from nowhere,
yeah.
You're going to be throwing a lot of Benadryl down that poor pup or yourself.
Yeah. Oh, so even humans, you should.
I'm just throwing that out. I'm no doctor.
Yeah, I should have added a disclaimer right when we started. In fact, I asked Dave off air about some of the stuff I wanted to talk about when it came to snakes. I will say, man, if you do somehow wind up with a dead rattlesnake that, you know, you've just killed or whatever, man, eat the thing. I think they're delicious. And I know other people eat them too. Now, here's the kind of disclaimer I should add is I don't know all the legal aspects of this. I know you got to have a permit to collect rattlesnakes in the state of Nevada. I'm assuming that it's kind of just one of those things like, yeah, if you happen to come across a rattlesnake and kill it for whatever reason, I don't think you're going to get in a ton of hot water.
Well, it's not advised.
Right.
You know, I mean, realistically, if it's in your backyard and it's underneath your deck and you got dogs and kids and stuff, totally understand.
Right. Okay, getting rid of it.
We got this. This is not a good place. You can always call in one of the urban wildlife companies to come and get it. If they do, some don't even deal with snakes, especially rattlers. You got to have somebody that knows what they're doing.
Okay.
For one thing. But if you end up kill it yourself, then okay. But when you're out in the middle of nowhere and you're scouting and you're hiking around and you're doing stuff like that and you happen to hear the rattle and you're like, ooh, I wonder where that rattle's coming from. And you start digging through the rocks and you find it. I don't understand the reason why you have to kill it. Unless you are starving and you're like, oh, you know, I've been lost for 3 days. Okay. But other than that, when you're out in the middle of nowhere, just leave the poor thing alone. I mean, that's its home. And it's Nevada's wildlife, and they're fantastic for the environment. And so
that's the pest control aspect, keeping down like those pack rats
or
whatever.
All kinds of stuff. I mean, you name it. So, I mean, anyway, that's just my take. I know a lot of people, as soon as they see or hear a rattlesnake, man, they're grabbing the first shovel or rock or whatever big stick they can find. And to be honest, they say that's like 14 or so percent of the strikes. Is people trying to get in position to kill a snake while it's not, because like, okay, I got this rock. Okay, I got to get a little closer. Okay, I got to get a little closer. And then they get whacked.
Okay. I'll share a personal story. This was out in the Tobins, but walking out along a creek there and stepped right over, didn't even see it. And my brother was with me. And I wound up killing it. It didn't rattle or anything. I stepped over it and didn't rattle, nothing. I, again, with a shotgun, my first instinct being the knuckle dragger that I am, because he let out an expletive and goes, snake. And I kind of turn around and the thing's right there and I punch the trigger because I'm a knuckle dragger and I didn't really think it through. It was just like, whoa, bang. So yeah, I mean, we're talking about this. I think it's an old wives' tale, but I've heard that there is some component like snakes that rattle pass on that gene. I don't know if that's true or not, but I have a little bit of a thing in my head where it's like, okay, if I'm super close to it and it doesn't rattle, I want it gone. If it rattles, it's like, oh, cool. Look at that. I'm going to back off a little bit and maybe I take a couple pictures or a little video of it. And it's like, oh, that's a cool animal. And then I just let it go. Yeah. And let it be on its way.
And I don't know about the, It could be a wise tale. And actually, I mean, there could be some fact in it. I guess that's something to kind of look into because who knows? I mean, there's plenty of genetic and hereditary things that
animals
occur.
Pass on.
Well, all of us, man. You know, geez.
Yeah.
I got cousins I really wonder about.
Yeah. Hey, same. Is it a family bush, not a family tree?
Yeah. Is it just a stump? What's going on here?
Yeah. So, I think it's going to be a big snake year. I don't know what goes into that as far as the climate and why, but I will say I've seen more snakes. In fact, we found one when we were out scouting. I've seen more this year than I have in years past. If you get pictures of a really big one, tag us at NV_backcountry on Instagram.
It'd be really cool.
Let's get into a little bit about animals, big game specifically, and how extreme heat affects them. Stay tuned on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk.
All right, thank you for staying tuned for this next segment here. This is Nevada Backcountry with Henry and David, and we are going to jump right into high temperatures for hunting and scouting and just being outside in the wilderness. So a couple weeks ago, we were sitting here talking about all the snow still on the mountains and not having access to certain areas because there's still 6 and 7 foot drifts, and here we are 3-4 weeks later, and we're in triple digit temperatures, and the snow is gone, and it has greened up the entire mountainside. So we are going to kind of talk about some of this. Animals in general, they're going to act just like you do, or I do, and anyone else. When it's hot, you want to find some shade. You want to find a cool spot.
Yeah,
you know, the only animals that are out there looking for the sun and sitting out there and just soaking it up are going to be your cold-blooders, your reptiles and such, and your beach bikini folk that just need to get that super darn tan going. So
the South Florida crowd?
South Florida crowd, yes. Yeah. That's what I was trying to lead into. So when you're out scouting and it does start getting warm, I mean, what are you focusing on when you're out there and it's starting to get hot and you're sitting on a rock and you're trying to glass and you're just like, my God, this is nuts?
I'll say right off the bat, man, scouting in triple digit temperatures is extremely hard. You basically have 2 hours at daybreak, 2 hours at sunset.
Yeah.
That's when they're going to be moving. Otherwise, you're... man, picking apart underneath trees, stuff like that, trying to find any little pocket of shade, focusing on valley floors or like canyons, cuts on the floor of it. You know, I had this experience when I was out scouting last weekend. There's a good 20 degrees of difference between being out in the sun and being tucked away in a canyon somewhere.
Oh, for sure. My God. Same with us when we were out there. You know, it's 100 degrees out and you find yourself a nice little shaded cubby up against like a nice hillside or something.
Yeah.
And it's darn refreshing.
You walk into it and you're like,
oh yeah, I can do that. I can take a nap right here.
And here's the bummer about that though. I had this thought, was like, I am where the deer want to be right now.
Yeah.
So maybe I should suck it up because I got a bottle of ice water, whatever, you know, maybe I should be out in the sun looking into the area I'm hanging out in. But taking that a step further, I wanted to pick your brain, David, because I was sitting out on my back patio and I was watching our chickens and I noticed the behavior was just odd. It was super hot and they were running around with their wings like out away from their body and their tongues out, almost like they were panting or whatever, their beaks were open. So I wanted to ask you about some animal, like biological behavior in extreme heat. Do deer pant like a dog?
Well, they can, yeah. I mean, they can pant. I mean, you can watch them sometimes and they will be, you know, mouth will be open and their tongue will be like thrusting in and out, kind of panting.
Okay.
In a panting fashion. They're going to act really similar to a lot of ungulates. They're going to be, you may see them like elk. They're going to go to a wallow. They're going to roll around in a wallow, get nice and wet and muddy, you know, get that coat on them. But yeah, they will. I mean, it's hot for them as well, and they're going to try to find nice shaded areas. On certain years when water's really hard to come by, you're probably going to find a lot of them bedded down around or near or within proximity to a water source, a spring, a guzzler, something like that, because they will get up in the middle of the day. I mean, we've all seen it happen, and they will go straight down to the water source, drink, and then they'll go back up and bed back down.
Yeah,
just kind of like us going to the fridge.
Okay,
you know, we're outside mowing the lawn. We walk in, we grab a beverage, and we're, you know,
yeah.
I mean, you just kind of relate it in that context. It's like, okay, what would I do if it was like stupid ninja hot out?
Okay.
What would I do like right now?
Do they have sweat glands?
No.
Okay.
No.
So yeah, similar. And that's why I bring up the panting thing.
Yeah.
Is
and like your chickens, they're raising their arms or their wings. Not arms, you know, what else, you know, chicken wings. So they're raising them out because the wings, when it's up against their body, it's like a blanket.
Yeah. They're
like,
insulating.
Yeah. They're insulating. Yeah. So they're opening that up kind of like if you're like really hot, you're going to lift your arms up and kind of get some airflow in there. And then they're opening their mouth, trying to regulate that temperature because they're overheating. So, you know, expending the heat from their mouth and opening that up, and then they got their wings out. And sometimes you'll see, like, the birds will kind of almost – it looks like they're almost like a flapping, but they're just trying to move air. They're just trying to move air and cool themselves off. Deer, sometimes what you'll see them do, or some of the, you know, elk and antelope. Antelope handle it a lot better because all of their hairs are hollow.
Okay.
And they can regulate the temperature variance a lot better than – elk and deer. I mean, you'll see, that's why when you're antelope hunting, you can hunt all day long because they're out in the heat. They're out, they're bedded out way out in the open, or they're wandering and feeding all day long.
Okay.
They have a lot better ability to regulate that temperature. The deer and the elk, not so much. They do need to find a cooler area. And,
okay.
You know, it is, like you said, it's up in the canyons, it's up in the trees. Generally, when it really gets warm, they're going to be further into the trees and the cover than, you know, along the edge. Because the edge is going to be a little warmer.
That makes sense.
Yeah, you know, when you've been out, I know if I've felt it, when I've gone into some of these PJ habitats and get down into some of that stuff that's like walking on cornflakes.
Yeah.
You know, you get further you get into some of that stuff, you're like, wow, it's really cool in here.
Yep.
You know, you go from 100 degrees to high 70s or something, or low 80s, and you're like, all right. And you kind of hang out there for a little bit, kind of cool yourself off.
I had a cool experience on an elk hunt a couple years back, but the amount of water that this bull drank from a guzzler was mind-blowing. And how fast, again, going back to like experiences with pets and stuff, you watch your dog kind of lapping at water, and they get a good bit. Man, this thing was straight sucking water out of a guzzler and like lowered the overall level of water. I mean,
you can hear them.
Gallons. Yeah.
You can hear the slurping. I've seen that with a deer. I actually saw the deer drink so much when he got done drinking, he was walking off and stopped and he just started puking the water back out because he had just
really? Yeah.
He'd topped it out and, you know,
he had to cut some.
Yeah. It was.
When it's super hot, man, they hit water.
Yeah.
They're not there for very long, but they are sucking it down really quick. And then they're going back to whatever that is. But watching those chickens, and I got thinking about it, and wanted to pick your brain being a biologist on as far as what they do, what kind of biological mechanisms they have to regulate heat. Obviously, kind of talking to you now, it's more of a behavioral thing, avoidance mostly.
Yeah. And that's, you know, so when you're out hunting, it's a really good idea to stay out till just about dark so that you can put the animals to bed. You can see the animals, you know where they are when they're bedding down for the evening, and then get out there really early in the morning because when you're getting into the high 90s and 100 degrees outside, a lot of these animals, they're bedding down by 8:30 in the morning. I mean, I've seen deer heading into the trees at 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning on really, really hot days. If you don't catch that and you're not seeing this movement and you're not getting out into the field to do any hunting until 20 minutes, an hour after sunup, you're likely not going to see much.
You're going to miss them.
You're going to miss where they are so that you can plan your afternoon hunt based on, okay, they might be coming out of these trees, or there's a spring on the other side of this hill. Maybe I should be setting up over there. So you've really got to be flexible with your time when you are actually on the hunt.
And I will tell you that last trip into the pine nuts, we about smoked a deer on the way out in the side by side. It was probably 9:30 at night.
Yeah.
It was dark because we had finally got to that point where it's like, okay, we can't see anything through glass anymore. Let's go ahead, throw the headlamps on, split, get out of here.
Yeah.
And it was a doe just hanging out at this little water source we had scoped out earlier.
Yeah.
And she's just hanging out in the middle of the road. But where I was going with that is, even though it's still warm, in fact, I got up to go for a run the other day and it was already like 72 degrees at 5:30 in the morning.
It's bizarre. It's bonkers. Yeah.
So even though it's only, you know, at that time of night, it's probably still 90 degrees when you're talking about 105 daytime temps. It's enough of a temperature variance where, yeah, last light, that's when they want to move.
Oh, exactly. You think about it, you know, look, me and the wife, we really, once the sun starts going down in the evening, we love to go hang out on the porch or go for a walk.
Do you have misters?
You know? No.
You have the misters going?
No, well, no, we haven't set those things up yet.
Okay.
But the evenings have been so nice, so
yes,
calm and cool. You just sit outside and just hang out and then go for a walk or something. And animals are going to do the same. They're like, all right, it's time to get up, maybe do some nibbling, get some water.
Cruise around.
Yeah, and then, yeah, exactly. Cruise around and then get back into the beds and such.
When we come back after the break, let's get into shot placement, maybe a little bit of personal ethics without waxing too philosophical about it. Stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. Grab another cup of coffee. We will be right back on Nevada Backcountry. Hey, now that you've had a chance to refill the coffee, let's jump back into it. Without going too far off the reservation here, I wanted to talk about shot placement a little bit with you. Everybody's got their own personal moral compass when it comes to this stuff. There are no real, well, I mean, I guess there would be a hard and fast rule with, hey, put it through the vitals. But when it comes to shot placement, shot selection, what is your go-to, Dave?
My go-to in regards to shot placement?
Yeah, and specifically, let's talk archery.
Oh, okay. So when I'm analyzing an animal that's on the hoof and I'm wondering how to shoot this thing, my focus is getting through both lungs.
Okay.
That's my focus. Determining how to do that based on the animal, it's super situational. Depends on, my favorite shot is a slight quartering away where I can aim for the opposite front leg.
That offside leg.
That offside leg. That is absolute money. And I shoot mid-body. You know,
yep, halfway up.
Halfway up and for the opposite leg. That's my money shot. When they start, you know, broadside, obviously, broadside. That one's a pretty simple one. But when they start getting quartering to you, uphill quartering to you, you know, and they start changing all these angles, then you've really got to take a look. If you want a good ethical shot and you don't want to have to chase an animal for 2 or 3 miles and looking at dots of blood every 10 feet, if you're that meticulous.
Right.
The cruddy thing is there's hunters out there that are like, he'll be fine. And they don't want to pursue that.
Yeah.
Absolutely, you shouldn't be hunting, in my opinion. You should have your license taken away, but that's my 2 cents.
Yeah.
But when, like, a quartering to me shot, that was my sheep was quartering to me just a touch. And I went for just to the end of his shoulder blade.
Okay.
And I knew from that point, and knowing the internals of an animal, it's always a good thing to look at and kind of Google it so you can see where everything sits.
Oh, there's a wealth of information out there.
It's like ridiculous. There are simulation programs out there for placement for archery.
Oh, okay. Because
there's different placements for archery compared to rifle.
And I wanted to touch on that real quick. Yeah, because a lot of guys that come from rifle hunting into archery hunting, they like that broadside crease. And I mean, that's a great shot.
It's a great shot.
But I will say, I'm like you. I look for that biggest margin of error. And what I'm trying to stumble through here is basically, you know, yeah, with a rifle, if you whack them through the shoulders, they're not going anywhere. They're dropping.
You bet.
With a bow and arrow, especially once you start pushing that 40 yard plus mark, you can hammer that shoulder, not get good penetration.
Oh, for sure.
And be chasing something. So for those guys that love to tuck it right there tight to that crease, you could back off an inch or two and you buy yourself a little bit of leeway on both sides. Yeah. So you don't wind up with a front shoulder shot or in that socket and the thing's running off.
Yeah, with your arrow shaft, full shaft sticking out of its shoulder because you didn't even get the broadhead through the shoulder blade.
Yep.
And, you know.
Versus a rifle, like I said, you'll bust through.
That's the difference. I mean, that's the big difference. You got a rifle, you can, you can blow through both shoulders with a 300 mag and she's done.
Right.
Party's over. A lot of folks from a lot of the literature, they're always focusing on the heart shot. So you got to remember the heart is about the size of your palm.
Right.
Okay. A little bit smaller, unless you're talking an elk, but it's much, a little bit bigger, but the lungs are significantly larger.
Yep.
So you double lung something. Yeah. It may run off a little bit. It's not going far.
No.
I think every animal that I've ever double lunged, I don't think I've ever had one travel more than about 40 to 60 yards.
Yeah.
Before they absolutely tumble. Those lungs fill up with blood and game's over.
Yes. I'm with you. And I will tell you, versus the heart, if I can get both lungs and clip the liver,
done.
It's That's magic. Liver just bleeds out so fast and they're going down.
Fantastic blood trails.
Like you said, that quartering away, if I can tuck it in near that closest last rib and come out right behind the offside shoulder, I get liver, I get both lungs and it's done.
Yeah.
This is archery stuff here. Cause with a rifle, I mean, I like that high shoulder shot where, you know, you break the shoulder on both sides and it's just down, done, not going anywhere. That hydrostatic shock that goes through the body cavity. You're not dealing with that with archery stuff.
No.
So I'm not going for the heart with a bow unless it's, you know, somehow the stars align and I got something perfectly broadside at 15 yards.
Yeah.
And I know I could hit a dime all day long. Yeah, fair enough. Maybe I might squeak it a little further towards the crease and a little lower. But otherwise, give yourself a margin for error.
Oh, totally agree. When they are quartering to you,
that's a tough shot.
It's a tough shot with archery. And if you are 30 yards or further, your best bet is to try, if you can figure out where that shoulder blade is to just be mid-body, just above it, and away from it.
Yep.
You're still going to puncture both lungs and you may catch some liver. But if you puncture both lungs, you're good. But try to stay away from that shoulder blade.
Now, what about frontals?
So I have done a frontal shot.
Elk or deer?
It was a deer.
Okay.
It was only about 27 yards.
Okay.
And right there, I just put it right through the esophagus, right in between the shoulders. You're a little bit below mid-body. And just
zip through it.
But again, you need to practice a lot. You need to know and have that comfort knowing that you can settle that pin there and hold it until the release goes off.
Well, and I've spent enough time shooting a bow with you that you're in that, we'll say 5% maybe, that I would say, that dude took a frontal and absolutely, I've seen him shoot a bow. He can, no problem. He can get it done. Most people, especially on it, and that's why I ask mule deer or elk, because elk inside of about 30 yards, a frontal, you got plenty of space to work with.
You got lots
there.
Of space.
And you got the natural hairline. You got like an aiming point.
Mule
deer is kind of tough. I've never taken a frontal.
Yeah, I follow the esophagus going down and then where it kind of disappears in between its shoulder blades, kind
right.
of its pecs area. I just go up a little bit above that and...
What do you have, like a baseball size to get it in?
Yeah, probably.
Tennis ball, something
probably,
like that?
You know, a baseball to maybe a little bit smaller, you know, a softball-ish size. You know, probably 5-inch maybe diameter-ish.
Gotcha.
To drop it in there. But if you hit it, the arrow goes all the way through to, you're cleaning the pipes.
Yeah. Well, it's absolutely devastating on elk and stuff. Yeah, but
it's done. I don't think that deer went more than 10 feet.
Okay.
I mean, it was just...
And that was just the shot that presented itself? And
that was the shot that presented itself to me, and I knew I could take it. If I didn't, like, I've had shots where I've had animals within my comfort range. Their placement wasn't, I didn't feel comfortable about how they were, what their positioning was, and I've let them go.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter if they were a good 4-point or what it was. I wasn't comfortable because I wasn't 100% sure that I was going to make a good, clean shot.
Right.
And I'm not chasing things. I'm not going to be like, well, let me get an arrow in it, and then I'll just shoot it again.
Yeah.
And then I'll just shoot it again and again and again, and it'll go down eventually. Well, I'm not doing that.
A friend of mine that doesn't hunt anymore and was extremely, I mean, went all over the world hunting, and but just doesn't hunt. And one of his last hunts, he went out, helped a friend, and the friend's kid turned the thing into a pin cushion. And it just bothered him so much. He was like, this, what are we even doing out here? Why?
Yeah.
Like, you know, hold it together, put the arrow where it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is such a tough thing. Everybody's got their own deal that they feel comfortable doing.
But what about a Texas heart shot? Would you?
I've taken one with a rifle.
With a rifle.
With a rifle.
With a rifle, yeah, because you can do it. You know you're going to, even if you hit a chunk of the hind quarter, you know, some of the pelvic bone.
Oh, and
there.
Dumped it. I mean, broke you're the spine and just dumped it.
Yeah. With a bow?
I don't know, man.
That's a whole, I did it once.
Okay.
It was a second shot.
Oh.
I would have never taken it as a first shot.
Oh, so let me back up then. I've taken as a follow-up shot I have before.
Yeah.
Never as the initial shot. Yeah.
No, never initial shot. It was a second shot. I'd shot the animal, knew I hit it really well. He just wasn't going down. He just stood there at 38 yards and just stood there.
And it went down, smoked it?
Oh, yeah. It didn't go anywhere after that.
On that note, thank you to our show sponsors, Out West Buildings, Legacy Sports International, and Truck Envy. Go see them. They support the show. They bring you the content that we talk about on air. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Stay tuned, because Tom Gresham is coming up next at 11 on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk.